Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode, I'm not even sure, 206 of the Fun With Cars Formula One podcast for coverage of quite a few things, including the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and a little bit of coverage even of the IndyCar race at Road America. I'm Robin Warner, and again, I am not alone. I am connected with Jamie Price, who has actually decided not to take a picture today and talk with me instead. Jamie, how are you?
I'm well, Robin. How are you?
I'm doing well. Missing those pictures, I'll be honest, though.
I know.
I like this working every day, 7 days a week. It works well for us.
I haven't had a day off since May, so I'm desperately needing some vacation time.
Well, I do sincerely appreciate you interrupting your vacation to talk with me and record it at the same time.
Anything to talk about car racing.
Well, then let's talk about car racing. So you and I last saw each other at the Canadian Grand Prix. That was interesting. It was a good race. Turned out to be a great result for Lance Stroll.
Yes.
And it once again showed
You'd thought he'd won the race after that.
Oh, well, I mean, he's 18, you know, and he'd had a rough start, so I can appreciate his enthusiasm, you know. But, but since then, a lot has happened in the racing world. But not only did you pay attention to the racing world at large, you were at the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and you were there on top of everything else shooting for Toyota.
I was.
So I need to hear about this.
It was my second year with Toyota, so I was there last year when, obviously, disaster struck with 2 minutes and 50 seconds left in the race or whatever it was.
I mean, that was comical. I mean, that was like childhood villain-esque. Just, it couldn't have been more scripted to be a bad result, you know?
So when we all thought, it can't get any worse. Famous last words.
Toyota brought three cars this year instead of two.
Yep,
Toyota was three cars. Decisively the fastest.
Yep, Kamui blitzed the lap record.
Exactly.
They.
So it was Toyota's race to lose.
It was Toyota's race to lose, and they had three cars with three very different driver pairings. They had, you know, the very fast kind of former Formula One drivers. And then they had the other car that was kind of a little bit more slow and steady, wins the race. And then they had the two rookies and Nicolas Lapierre, who's exceptionally fast, but has a history with Toyota. And it was kind of they were kind of the rabbit. I think they were hoping that they were going to be the rabbit that was going to go out and try and put Porsche off their game. Obviously, none of that worked in any in any way. Like, that's not how it went down at all.
Am I correct? Did they pair Buemi and Anthony Davidson?
Yeah,
those the two Formula One guys. Okay, and then
so they had Kamui and
Kobayashi
and Sarazan and
Stefan.
Yep.
Ah, okay. All right,
and Mike Conway.
Mike Conway. Now, Conway has IndyCar experience.
He does.
I don't think he has any Formula One experience.
He does not. I think he tested. I think he's tested before. But
he's a Brit, right, Conway?
Yep.
And then Kobayashi's obviously Japanese. And then Stefan, he's French.
Yep.
And Stefan, he's interesting because I think he has some Formula One experience from a while ago. And he was also in the World Rally Championship for a while.
Yep. And so he was the previous lap record holder at Le Mans. In the Peugeot.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was Kobayashi that put in that blitz, crazy fast, new lap record, pole lap
Kamui,
in the Toyota.
Kamui Kobayashi is probably my favorite driver on the planet these days. I think he embodies what I want to be. He's my spirit animal.
Wait. So your spirit animal is a human?
Yeah.
Well,
But that human, racing drivers have no personalities generally. Like, they do, but they don't. They are so buttoned up. They just care so much about what the PR world thinks, and
they have to for their paycheck. But yeah, they're beholden to that.
But there's guys that prove they don't have to, and they can still be themselves. And if you had looked hard enough at the drivers' parade this year, you would have found Kamui sitting off by himself having a beer or two. And that's the night before. This is the day after qualifying, and the afternoon before the 24 hours of Le Mans.
Okay, so he's your spirit animal because he drinks beer.
Well, no, because he just doesn't. He's so fast, but he just doesn't. He doesn't care what anybody else thinks. He does whatever he wants. He does what he wants, and he doesn't need to be politically correct about everything else. Like, everyone else is, drinking Evian bottled waters, and he's off in the corner with a Heineken.
Yeah. All right. I get that. I thought I was your favorite race car driver.
You're my spirit animal.
I've been demoted to second.
Yeah, you're my second favorite spirit animal.
Well, where would I rank in reality? I mean, I got to be 99th or something.
Probably.
I'm on the list, though, I think.
Yeah, you're definitely on the list.
You know, I did. This is self-serving entirely, but I did recently get my SCCA competition license.
Wow.
It's something I could have done years ago, but I just never went through. But just for a variety of reasons, I know now's the time. And indeed, the experience I had already made it pretty easy to get a waiver. And I went through the medical. And going through the medical evaluation was actually a little bit tense because I was like, well, how do I explain my injury in such a way? They're like, yeah, you shouldn't even be near a race car. And so
that ended up being damaged goods.
Right. Yeah. Quite damaged. But actually, it turned out to be pretty straightforward as well. So that has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about. And no one should care. So anyway. Kobayashi is your spirit animal.
Yep. But in general, great guy. The whole Toyota team is my spirit animal.
Okay. So you got a healthy, broad, vast spirit animal here.
I do.
We have a lot of ex-Formula One drivers. Stefan, as I mentioned, has all kinds of experience. And then who were the rookies again?
You would ask me that. Jose Maria Lopez and Yuki Konimoto, who's a Japanese driver.
Okay, so another Japanese driver, and then Lopez sounds Spanish, but that's an assumption on my part.
He's Portuguese.
Portuguese, okay. Yeah. Okay, so they have this broad, varied, all-star lineup. They have a lap record in addition to the pole position, and they have three different strong cars. Obviously, Buemi and Davidson are both Le Mans pros.
And then it just went...
What happened? What happened to Toyota?
Well, the number nine, very early in the race, maybe even lap one, was hit someone. So it had damage that kind of put it back 30 or 40 seconds. So that wasn't a great start. But the seven and eight were kind of leading and trading off the lead, and they were kind of basically helping each other. Essentially, and they were beating Porsche pretty soundly. Porsche was hanging in there, and then the curse of the modern LMP1 hybrid struck, and they had to do a major change on the 8 car. I don't know exactly what it was. It was something to do with the hybrid engine, the electrical gizmos that are buried deep inside of the car. So they brought it in, and I think it was in the garage for 2 hours or something like that.
Oh, man.
So essentially, yeah, they're no longer in the race. But the 7's still leading, and the 9's still in contention. I mean, it's not that far when you consider what then happened to everyone else.
30 to 40 seconds back, but not...
Yeah, not 2 hours.
Not hours behind, yeah.
Right. I guess about... So I was out shooting trackside. I came back to the media center right before sunset and then went out again for sunset. And I was down at this beautiful and slightly scary section of track, but right before they get to the kink on the Mulsanne. So they come out of Mulsanne corner and then go down, pretty long straight, and then they go around this kink, and then they head toward Indianapolis and Arnage. And I was in kind of that area right before they get to the kink.
It
was stunning. It was beautiful light. It's a really magical place to be. Toyota's leading the race. Life doesn't get much better than that.
Your spirit animals.
My spirit animals are running away with it. And I think it was around like 1 or 2 a.m., I guess.
It sounds about right, because it was roughly like hour 8, hour 9.
Yeah.
That I think that these things started falling apart.
Yeah. Within 1 hour, the 7 car had a clutch issue from that crazy, unexplainable, like, other LMP2 driver that came out and gave him the thumbs up, and Kamui had just, like, done a start from the pit box, and the clutch was still hot, and so it basically fried the clutch. I don't know, like, there's more technically minded people that would be able to explain it better than that, but it was just really bad luck, because he shouldn't have had to do that, obviously. And then the 9 car was hit.
So wait, real quick though, they fried the clutch, and that's because the clutch is so buried deep. That's a big repair.
Well, so it never made it back to pit lane. If they'd made it back to pit lane, they would have repaired it.
Oh, that's that accident. Oh yeah. God, that okay.
Neither car made it back to pit lane. The 8 made it back to pit lane on hybrid power, but its issues only like popped up on like the back half of the lap, so it could make it back around. Because they'd had oil pressure problems all week. Like I personally sat there and watched the mechanics do a full on engine and gearbox change on the 8 car right before, like during qualifying. It's incredible to watch. It's like watching a swarm of bees, like attacking like the hive, and everybody's working and climbing over each other, and people are like under each other's legs and between each other's arms. It's like a giant game of Twister with an LMP1 car in the middle of it. But it's really amazing to watch, and I really wanted to take pictures of everything that I was seeing, but I was seeing like the most technically sensitive parts of the car that I like. Every time I pulled my camera up, I'd get a weird look from one of the chief mechanics, and I would like slowly put my camera back down and just like. I didn't take the picture, but I did some like details and close ups of people's hands and stuff.
Yeah, so you're describing this swarm of bees, but everyone has a very specific job and it's getting done. That very specific job's getting done. So what it compiles into is just a really fast powertrain change.
Yeah. I mean, they're changing a very complicated system. I think they did it in like 20, 25 minutes or something like that. So
yeah,
back
that's
to
about how long it takes me to do an engine swap.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's about right.
So like back to your question, if the 7 car, its clutch issue then wouldn't allow it to engage a gear. So it had to do the entire 9 mile lap on its hybrid power, on the battery. And the hybrid, it regenerates based on when it's braking. So when it goes into a corner at high speed and brakes, it's all fine because it's regenerating power. But when you're going 6 miles an hour, you're not generating anything. You don't need to brake into Indianapolis. You can coast smoothly at a comfortable walking pace. So the car never made it back to pit lane. Kamui got out of the car and the car retired.
What are they? I mean, I think even if they have the, is it 8 kilojoule battery that if you're just on hybrid power, that's not that much to be battery only. And that's obviously not the purpose of these particular hybrid systems.
No. So, but if they'd made it back to pit lane, it would have been evidently a 30-minute change and they would have gotten back out. And as it turns out, they would have won the race still.
That's what's so incredible about Toyota's luck was there was enough bad things that happened to Porsche that had they been able to keep going, they still would have been okay, but they were just, I wasn't able to watch the race as much as I would have liked to, but just even seeing the highlights, it was almost surreal. It's like,
it seemed like nobody wanted to win the race this year. It was like, just nobody was going for it. Or they were going for it, but the race wasn't letting them go for it. So
yeah,
it was weird.
Yeah. So what was the mood like in Toyota. I mean, I'm sure the first few hours it was stressful and hectic, but they were still, it was still okay.
The first few hours was confident. It was, everybody felt good. Everybody was laughing. The mechanics were cool and, you know, everybody was good. And then once the 7 car had the issue and then the 8 car or the 9 car was crashed into by an LMP2 car, and had more issues like that, then it retired on its like way back to the pit lane. So the 7 and 9 are out of the race within the span of 50 minutes or something like that. And your only remaining car is 2 hours behind. It went from like confidence to this isn't happening.
Right. It does feel, I mean, it has all the elements of a curse wrapped into that story.
Yep. I mean, that's not a new story. They've been cursed for 30 years, but I don't think it's a curse. I just think it's just bad luck. Like, they're going to get it. But the problem is there's a strong rumor going around that Porsche is going to withdraw from World Endurance Championship and Le Mans at the end of the season. So you will basically have, and Toyota has committed through 2020 or something, I think. Okay. Is what's the point in spending 400 million euros to go race Le Mans by yourself, essentially?
Right, right.
So if they win Le Mans, like last year, if they'd won Le Mans, they would have won Le Mans legitimately. If they'd won this year, they would have beat
Audi and Porsche
right.
to do it.
If they won this year, they would have just beat Porsche, but Porsche only had 2 cars, whereas they had 3 the last several years. So it's kind of scaled back. It was a very weird vibe not having Audi there. Audi's been there for 2 decades, maybe longer. It was very strange not to have them around. They're a very big presence. They're a very big hospitality presence. They bring a lot of fans. There's always like a ton of Audi flags and hospitality suites. And obviously their cars are pretty recognizable and their drivers have been icons for the last 10, 15 years. And it was weird.
Yeah. It's coming to a point where, you know, LMP1 really was just ascending into these super interesting heights, and their performance, like straight lap performance, was getting more and more comparable to Formula One even. And they could compete for 24 hours on a clip. So they were just becoming these incredible cars. All the momentum was going their direction. And then, you know, Volkswagen had their major diesel issue, which has just thrown everything in that group into a tizzy.
Yep.
Porsche is a bit insulated from that, but not completely. So, yeah, without some real serious newcomers, it's going to become kind of a hard justification.
Well,
go ahead.
The problem with LMP1 is the cars are incredible. They are faster. They are technically like more aggressive than Formula One cars in almost every way. Like, you watch them on track and it is more impressive than Formula One. Like, even current Formula One cars with more downforce, it's very, very impressive to see an LMP1 car at speed at any racetrack. I mean, they are flat out. Like, it's crazy. But they're so complicated that it's their own worst enemy. Is like every single LMP1 car at Le Mans this year had a catastrophic issue that took everybody but the winning car and the second place car out of the race. And they didn't have enough cars to make a podium out of it. They had two car teams on the podium. There was an empty third car.
There's an LMP2 car there. Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, the Porsche that won the race was thought to be out of contention early on.
Yep.
Because it had, a 50-minute, I think it was, roughly speaking.
Yeah.
It was 50-minute delay.
It's crazy. And the 2021 regs or whatever they're bringing in for LMP1, it makes it even more complicated. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know if that's what the manufacturers want, but apparently they're going to have to plug in the car during a pit stop and do a fast charge, battery, and then They will have to be under electric power for the first kilometer after a pit stop, and then they will have to finish the 24 hours of Le Mans under electric power. That to me just sounds like disaster waiting to happen. Like if the ACO thinks that this year was bad and like slightly embarrassing for the technology, it isn't going to get any better.
Yeah, and so the big question is, are new manufacturers going to come in, or is Toyota literally going to be, you know, racing themselves, which would be a shame. But, you know, I don't think anyone's just going to stand there. It'll sort itself out eventually, but it's going to be weird.
It's going to be a transition period. I don't know how else to describe it. I think the class might die for the next couple of years and then be revived in 2021 when hopefully they can get more manufacturer support. I just don't see, if Porsche leaves, there's no reason for Toyota to be there by themselves. It doesn't prove anything.
So the mood in Toyota's pits was more just disbelief than anything.
It was just disbelief. I think it was worse last year, just having like that euphoria for 23 hours and 57 minutes or whatever it was. Like they were leading the race last year. It was all but in hand. And then disaster struck this year. It was like they retired with more than half the race to go. So yeah. It was just a weird vibe. It wasn't like necessarily negative. It was just different. It's just nobody was really there enjoying it anymore. And we all had to keep doing our jobs. I had to keep taking pictures of the 8 car. The guy I work for still had to keep taking pictures of the 8 car. You know, we have to treat it like it's still in the race because it is in the race, and it was second in its class. And that's valuable championship points for World Endurance Championship, but it was ninth overall, I think, or something.
Right. It was behind, I don't remember exactly, but I know it was behind several LMP2s.
Well, it'd be behind 8 LMP2s or 7 LMP2s because you had one LMP1 that won, and then however many between it and the Toyota.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
I was thinking both Porsches were up there, but I'm sorry.
One Porsche retired, two Toyotas retired, and the Baikalis car was out after like two or three laps, and that's the only other LMP1 car in that. Like, if they'd stayed in the race, they would have had their first podium, potentially had their first win.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. So here's an interesting contrast. Of course, for me personally, you know, the racing can potentially be interesting, but the LMP2 class isn't terribly interesting.
No, I don't really find it that engaging.
But the GTE Pro class, wow. I mean, that was impressive. You know, we had last year, we had Ford coming in and, you know, having the 50-year reunion of the race win and all this. This time it was a class win, but it was still cool. But this year it came in, and the balance of performance was totally different. So all of a sudden, Chevrolet was much more competitive, and Aston Martin was surprisingly competitive.
In a very old car.
Yeah, definitely so. And here's what I love. So turns out the winning results were Aston Martin first place, Ford second place, Chevrolet third place, Porsche fourth place, Ferrari fifth place. Top five in class, five different makes. I just couldn't believe it.
And the racing for the GTE guys is always just so good. Like from the beginning of the race to the end of the race, as a photographer, it's awesome because, you know, when we're out there covering a race, you want to get pictures of a race with like multiple cars in the photo. And it was awesome to see like in one picture, you could get two or three or four cars in one shot.
Yeah. And that's racing for position.
Yeah. Racing for position, not somebody getting lapped.
Exactly.
It was like awesome to have pictures of the Corvette and the, like holding off the Aston Martin with the Ford, like in the background. It's awesome.
Yeah. And that's
how it always is. It's like that every race, no matter where you go in the US, like it's awesome racing. It's the best racing on earth by far.
Yeah. And, I actually, and it's on the Auto Week podcast, which I'll give everyone a link to that on the Facebook page. I had an interview with Tony Kanaan a few days after Le Mans, leading into the IndyCar race at Road America. And, you know, Tony Kanaan was in the second 4GT. He finished sixth in class. And talking to him about racing GTE Pros, he just couldn't believe. He called it a 24-hour long dogfight. And,
yeah,
you know,
is.
He couldn't believe it was just relentless. And I thought that was amazing. And then there was, you know, potentially the talk of the story. Your buddy, your friend, Jordan Taylor, he was
Jordan
the
Tam
guy
Taylor.
In that Corvette.
Yep.
Is he your spirit animal?
He's not my spirit animal. I think Kamui is still my spirit
okay.
animal. No, he's a good friend, and he's a great driver, and he gives it all the time out on track. Like, he's just... He's a world-class race car driver and super humble, and he's just a funny guy. But I can't tell you everything that I know about, like, that car and what was going on, but he gave it all. Like, he just gave everything that he had. And when the tires started to go, he like, went straight through a gravel trap, kept his foot in it. He didn't have another option. He wasn't going to make the turn. He just went straight for it, and that was one of the punctures that he had from that. But
right, yeah, and you know, Jordan was not treated terribly well in some of the media, in some of the articles that came out about the race. But I mean, to hold off a faster car for 45 minutes and only then have to give in because you know the tires were punctured, I thought it was incredibly. An incredibly strong performance from Jordan. He did, just as you said, he did everything he could. And, you know, details about, and nuance about what was actually going on with the car and certain condition, things like that. That's all the kind of stuff that, you know, most media never hear about or don't even care to learn. And
well, I think it's common knowledge that the Michelins, because they were talking about it on Radio Le Mans, but the Michelins, it was very hot. This Le Mans was very, very hot.
Yeah.
We didn't have a cloud all day, like all week, really. So it was hotter than it's ever been at Le Mans. And World Endurance Championship has a rule that if it's over a certain temperature, then they have to short stint drivers and the tires... It's not an operating window for the Michelins. And basically the Corvette Michelins were way outside of their operating window the last 2 hours. And I know that they triple stinted the tires on that car.
Wow.
And they were not changing tires when they were changing drivers because you lose time doing
right.
that.
Yep. Because I think you're not allowed to do anything. I'm trying to remember the rules here exactly. But you have to change the drivers, then work on the car. Or work on the car, then they change the drivers
right.
or something like that.
So the strategy that Corvette was doing, and again, that this isn't secret stuff. You could see it. Radio Le Mans was talking about it. They would change drivers, and then when they came in for their next stint, they would change the tires and not the driver.
Mm.
So the driver, you'd get fuel and tires, but you wouldn't change the driver, and then you would change the driver on the next stint. So he and Jan Magnussen were changing for the last like little bit of the race, I guess.
Wow.
So he was on old tires. I mean, he was holding off an Aston Martin on like I think a stint fresher's tires, which, you know, those Michelins, they're durable. It's amazing. They're doing three stints around a 9 mile course, which a stint is about 40 minutes or something.
Yeah,
40 minutes.
Or 50, something like that.
It's like what, and almost 2 hours of racing without changing tires.
Yeah, and these are high speed corners, many of them. You know, it's definitely a feat of engineering.
Yep.
That the tires you could even consider the option that Chevrolet considered.
Yep. I mean, at the end of the day, that everybody got what they wanted, and that was a great race. Like, till the very last lap of a 24-hour race. You can't ask for anything more than that. No, but it doesn't matter who won. Like, Jordan said it himself that he's proud of how he did and
yeah.
how,
oh, and
you know,
as he
how
should
the team
be.
Did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met Jordan and Ricky for the first time at the Detroit Grand Prix. They were racing in their Cadillac IMSA car.
Yep.
And you're absolutely right. Both great guys. It was a lot of fun to talk with them both and meet them and those types of things. And, yeah, I think they are great drivers, and I think that Jordan deserves lots of credit for the as doing as well as he did to hold off the Aston.
For sure.
So tell me, like, sum up the race. What was the 24 hours of Le Mans experience like for you overall? Like, first of all, when did you sleep?
I slept from 3 to 4. No, it was 4 to 5:30 or 4 to 5, and just because it was depressing. Like, it just wasn't, like, I'm there with Toyota, I'm there for Toyota, I'm not there for anyone else. It was just kind of depressing. And so I got an hour of sleep in on the media center floor. My fire suit is my pillow, and woke up.
Pillow.
Yeah, they're nice, actually. They're very fluffy. And
do you take it into the bed at home sometimes? You're like, you know, just need a little security blanket of sorts.
It smells. I don't take it anymore. It needs to be washed, actually. But I had I went out for sunrise, which was a nice sunrise. We had great, like, you couldn't have asked for a better race as far as photography goes. It was awesome.
You're talking about light and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The important stuff. I don't care what's happening in the race.
Light is
important.
The
light was nice. But if the light's not nice, did the race actually happen? No.
What if a tree falls in the wood and no one hears the sound, no one sees it, did it make a sound?
No, it didn't.
Yeah. And so, yeah, if a race car drives around a track and no one takes a picture,
did it actually drive around the track? Nope. But so we had great light all weekend. It was fun. No one at Toyota, me and James, the guy I work for that's the Toyota team photographer, we were just kind of like, this sucks. Like, we're not here taking pretty pictures of Porsche, and we're not here taking pretty pictures of anyone else. We're here to tell Toyota's story, and they're 3 hours behind.
Yeah.
Climbing their way back forward, but
right.
Still, like, in a different race.
So the mood was just, you were kind of caught up in that disbelief to a certain extent. And by the end of the race, of course, you're extremely behind on sleep. And is it just going through the motions at that point? Or
motions. Yeah, it's going through the motions. You know what you have to do, and you know where you need to be and when you need to do it. So it wasn't, I mean, it's still special to be there, but it loses a lot of that desire and that energy. Like, it kind of keeps you going on adrenaline, especially last year when James and I are saying, like, oh my God, we're going to win this race.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Toyota's going to win this race.
Yeah.
Like, we need to prepare. We need to start hiring photographers to be across the track and shoot the finish and, you know, shoot the podium from here, 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 and here. And, like, you know, we're a 2-man band and we need 10 people here. And this year it was like, well, there's 13 hours left. Let's go have a beer in the Michelin bar, the media center, and get an hour of sleep and then go back to work and just cover the rest of the race as best as we can.
How was the food?
The Toyota food is great. We had Toyota Hospitality taking care of us all week, and they're great. It's an amazing group of people.
So what do they try to give, like, Japanese flair? Do they try to keep with the French cuisine? Like, what kind of fare did you eat? Because I don't know too super well what your food preferences are, but
you cannot be picky if you travel a lot.
Yeah,
anybody that travels knows that you can't be picky. So I'll eat pretty much anything that's put in front of me. I have favorites, but so they have a buffet bar for, because a lot of the mechanics, most of the mechanics are a combination of British, French, and German. There's all of the engine guys, the Toyota engine guys are all Japanese. So in the hospitality, they have two separate buffet areas, one that's more catered toward the Japanese, traditional meals that they would like and feel comfortable with and a taste of home kind of thing. Everybody else gets, you get like a chicken or a meat sampler, and they have pasta and, you know, always a really good salad. But in the garage, which is generally where I ended up during the race itself, you just, like, they had ham and cheese sandwiches that were delicious, like smothered in mustard. And it was like exactly what you needed to kind of pick you up again and keep you going and grab a bottle of water or Gatorade and a sandwich on your way past. And so they do a good job.
Okay. So at least from a culinary point of view, you really hope Toyota comes back. And yeah. and certainly just as a race fan, I hope that the rumors about Porsche pulling out are not true, and we can have that battle continue at least.
Yep.
But so that was,
should we talk about Lewis Hamilton?
Yeah, exactly. That was an amazing experience. And then a week later, you know, Formula One brought the drama yet again. I mean,
I was sitting for clarification, I was sitting at home on my couch watching that race.
How did that feel? Like, did you take pictures of the television screen?
No, but I was looking at the light, and because the race is later in Azerbaijan because they want to cater to a European market.
Right.
So it's,
and they
later,
wanna, like,
in the afternoon.
Yeah, you get into dusk towards the end of it.
Yeah, so I was watching like, ooh, light. Wow. Like,
well,
yeah, that's where I'd want to be right now. And
well, Baku is an interesting, it's really fascinating the way they laid out the circuit, because it goes through parts of the old section of the city, parts mm-hmm. of the newer sections of the city. So there is a lot of diversity in the background.
Yeah. I've heard mixed reviews from the photographers. Some guys like it. Some guys don't. It doesn't look like the best track on earth to photograph, but it doesn't look terrible either when the light's that good. So I was sitting at home watching the race with my wife on the couch, and, you know, she's become a big Formula One fan and doesn't really have a driver she pulls for, but she's more interested in the race itself. So I'm not a massive Vettel or Hamilton fan, and so watching the recent, like, internet arguments between Vettel fans and Hamilton fans has been rather entertaining, because I don't care.
Yeah.
I just want a good championship.
Right. But it was a for real thing that happened there. I mean,
it was,
you know, for, you know,
are you surprised that he got off with the penalty that he, or the quote penalty that he did?
You know, it's a weird set of circumstances, because had he been penalized and Lewis did that fluke random issue with the head protector part of his cockpit that forced him to come into pit again, Lewis would have easily won the race, and, you know, Vettel would have been back in, you know, fifth place or something. But it was just this weird combination of circumstances that made it such that Vettel's penalty didn't seem like much of a penalty at all. I feel like it was a light penalty, but not out of the realm of reasonable for what happened. And based on the interviews and everything that happened, I don't even think Vettel realized he hit Hamilton.
I don't think he either did either. I think he just took his hands off the
right.
wheel. He didn't turn into him, like, he didn't, like, shove, because if you're going to turn the wheel right or left, you have to do something pretty drastic with your hands. There has to be a movement there. And he let go. Like, he was both hands up in the air, just like, you know, shouting in German or Italian or whatever he shouts in these days. And he just let go of the wheel. And it's like the car turned into Lewis's car. And, you know, it wasn't definitely not a good moment for Vettel or Ferrari or the sport. But
yeah,
I don't know. I don't think it was malicious.
Right. No, completely agree.
And I think that's why he got off with what he did. It was stupid, but I don't think he did it on purpose. Like, I'm going to drive into Hamilton's
right.
car.
Exactly. Exactly right. And the idiocy of it, the whole thing, was how upset that Vettel got that Hamilton slowed down, because had roles been reversed, I'm sure Vettel would be doing similar things. And Vettel should just have separated emotions from that event more. So to me, it was really remarkable how much Vettel has become just angry at everyone for not driving exactly the way he wants him to. I mean, he would get, you know, the whole thing that happened a couple seasons ago between Vettel and Daniel Kvyat and how he kept getting upset. Yeah, Kvyat made some bonkers moves, but, you know, Vettel would just get so amped up so quickly that it was hard to, you know, hard to have much pity for him in those circumstances.
But I don't really feel that badly for Hamilton either, because he's definitely a loudmouth on the radio too. Like he's a passive aggressive radio guy, like always talking to Charlie, and you know, Charlie Whiting's not talking back. He's just like, Charlie, we need to go faster. This isn't acceptable. Like, yeah. Dude, drive your car and shut up.
Right. And so they, through this weird confluence of circumstances, took themselves out of the race. And who was it? But yet again, it was Daniel Ricciardo that grabs the victory. It was incredible.
Maybe Danny Ric is actually my spirit animal.
You know, your spirit animal coffer.
There's some
is
awesome
pretty darn
guys
cool.
though. It is, but there's some awesome animals in there.
In the Formula One world, Daniel Ricciardo is the most likable driver out there, and he's an easy fan favorite. You know, I think he embodies what most of us want your drivers. It's like, what I'm doing is incredible and I'm in love with it and I'm excited to be a part of it. And that's, and Daniel really shows that. And I just love him for it.
I agree. He's awesome.
And so, you know, Bottas was there again, collecting good points, but you know, we mentioned it early in the race, but who was in third place, but young French Canadian Lance Stroll.
That blew me away. I did not see that coming.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think he saw it coming.
Like, so the team of photographers that I work with, we do basically a group text with each other every weekend, and we all pick our top 10, and like in a million years, I never would have put Stroll in the top 5, much less the top 10, much less the top 3.
Right. Yeah, I know. I think the only person more surprised than, you know, you and I, maybe Claire Williams, was Lance Stroll. He was like, this is incredible. I mean, so I appreciate his real enthusiasm for it as well. And what I thought was funny is Lance Stroll is performing well enough that he's getting the attention of Jacques Villeneuve to start saying a bunch of crummy things about Lance Stroll, which is laughable.
If you have Jacques talking smack about you, you've done something right.
That means that's another milestone you've reached. So yeah, and now, you know, you and I were recording this on a Saturday. Qualifying for Austria has already happened. And
it's Bottas on pole. I've been fishing all morning, so I haven't really
Bottas was on
given
pole.
A crap. Hamilton and then Vettel,
Hamilton was third, Vettel was second, but then Hamilton also has a 5-grid place penalty for a gearbox change. Right. So third on the grid will be Raikkonen.
Do you see that video where the guy that was doing the post-qualifying interviews asked Hamilton and Vettel to shake hands and and Hamilton refused?
Well, Hamilton's like, we already did that, and then turned around and walked away. Well, that guy was being a little bit scatterbrained and jumpy, the interviewer. So, you know, had it been, you know, David Coulthard or, you know, Patrick Stewart or somebody like that, that might have been a little bit more of a pull. But
No one's going to be rude to Patrick
Stewart. You can't be. He's a consummate gentleman. How can you ever be rude? But
you can't be.
So we have Austria and then British Grand Prix after that. I'm quite looking forward to Silverstone with the new faster cars around there. I think that's going to be a great spectacle. When's the next race that you'll be shooting?
Sadly, not for a while. Probably Singapore.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
yeah, I have lots of work in the U.S. that I am I will be engaged with, and lots of sports car racing and Lamborghini stuff.
Well, I'm sure you'll keep in tabs with the Formula One races on your couch, and we'll definitely keep in touch with you about, because the stuff you shoot for Lamborghini is always nice too, and you know they go to the tracks I really love here in the States. So,
and I know you're like Mr. Big Shot around town, going to Montreal and Goodwood and all that stuff. But you know, if you ever want to come to a Super Trofeo race, see some real driving.
Ooh.
Come on,
you know,
out.
I should. You know, I could.
You should race.
I could actually look into attending one of those. I think that's actually a good point. I should look into that. And it is worth mentioning, yeah, I was at the Goodwood Festival of Speed. That was a very cool event to see. And, you know, I did some stuff on Facebook and stuff like that. But visually, if you want to talk about light and spectacle and all the rest, that's a good place for a photographer to be.
I've never been asked to go.
Someone should ask you to go. I'll ask you to go. Hey, Jamie, you want to go?
Yeah, right. Let's do it. See you next year.
All right. Well, Jamie, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us. And we'll be in touch after England, I think. After Austria,
we'll text.
England. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yep. All right. Have a good day.
Okay, thank you once again, Jamie, for taking the time to talk with me. That was yesterday, Saturday afternoon, Eastern Standard Time, Eastern Daylight Time. And now it's early Sunday evening, and the Austrian Grand Prix has happened. And I have to say right off the bat, it was way boring compared to Azerbaijan. You know, there wasn't the petty drama. There wasn't the, threats. And the concern about the children, quite lame and adult and pedestrian by comparison. But huge congratulations to Valtteri Bottas for his second win of his career and second win of the season and fifth win of the season for Mercedes-Benz. He won in Russia and now here, and Lewis Hamilton has three wins to his name this season. It was another strong performance, and the biggest controversy, at least arguably, happened right at the launch of the race when Valtteri Bottas' impressive launch from the start was debatable as jumping the start. The stewards deemed that it was a safe launch and a fair launch, just really, really good. And Sebastian Vettel disagreed slightly, but he did not make too much of a fuss out of it. He just made sure that everyone knew that he disagreed with that. And, but it was deemed appropriate, and I'm very happy for that. I'm very happy to see Valtteri Bottas win for the second time. I am now here. It's me with Harrison. And so if you hear a little Harrison in the background, that's just because he wants to chime in, every once in a while. Originally, I planned on talking with my newest co-host, Christopher Roche, but he became unavailable, sadly. He really wanted to join, but he's quite optimistic and hopeful that he can join me in a conversation when we discuss the British Grand Prix, which is, in effect, in many ways, his home race. He's going to be quite keen to talk about that. And I will be quite keen to have a conversation with him. Jamie is also interested in talking Silverstone. So that should be, hopefully will be, a great conversation. Jamie had such great insights into Le Mans and the fact that he was there with Toyota and experienced all those things firsthand and underwent this drama with the team. That was incredible to see. And, be able to have that conversation was just great. And then, to have some fun with Azerbaijan, which really was just otherworldly when it came to the amount of emotional debate that came across, let alone it was good, clean racing, but there was just so much emotion and pent up anger and frustration that was coming out was just really amazing to see, which that's why Austria, by contrast, felt so subdued. It was, in every respect, a good race. Lewis Hamilton, he qualified third, but because of a five-place grid penalty, he ended up starting eighth and powered his way through to a fourth-place finish. And considering the field and the track and the tire degradation, you know, that was a very good job. Daniel Ricciardo impressed quite a bit, in my opinion at least, to get ahead of Kimi Raikkonen early and finish third. And yet again, it was the fifth retirement in the last seven races for Ricciardo's teammate, Max Verstappen. He was out of the race first lap. It was this collective thing that it was Daniel Kvyat who ended up taking out Verstappen and Fernando Alonso. So that was a bit unfortunate that it was Kvyat. But, you know, if you look at the replay, it wasn't super black and white that it was all Kvyat's fault. It was much more so just a confluence of circumstances that turned it into an event that not everyone could avoid. But, you know, if you had to blame someone, it was indeed Kvyat. And it was a shame because, you know, Alonso was talking more positively about the McLaren Honda than he had in a long time. I mean, I think this is the most positive he talked about it this season. And, you know, they qualified, Alonso and Stoffel Vandoorne, they qualified mid-pack. I think they were, what, 12th and 13th? But they couldn't, I don't know. Stoffel Vandoorne and did end up finishing the race. He did finish 12th. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if these more positive vibes about the McLaren Honda do carry through to Silverstone and beyond. It's something I'm definitely going to keep a close eye on because I'm a big Honda fan in general in Formula One, and I've just been so sad that Honda struggled so perpetually with powertrain. They haven't been able to get on top of it yet. I still think they eventually will, and once they do, they'll eventually build a fantastic power unit, but I don't know what's holding them back, and it'll be interesting to see how much patience everyone has. And when I say everyone, that includes Fernando Alonso and indeed McLaren and indeed Honda corporate, because this is something that they can only stand for so long, right? But, you know, back to Austria. Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting there, Harrison. Back to Austria. Sebastian Vettel, he did end up finishing second in the race. He's just kind of become this like this anti-hero in a sense. You know, Vettel was the one that made the most fuss about Valtteri Bottas jumping the start. He got on the radio early saying, "I think he jumped the start." And then even after the stewards cleared him, and he's on the podium with him, he's arguing that, no, he jumped the start and he just got lucky or something. And it's like, just from the PR point of view, just let that go, you know. And another point of view, I mean, you know, Vettel's action at Azerbaijan with his, you know, hitting the side of Hamilton during the yellow flag, the full course caution. You know, that gave him a more steward points. He's now got 9 points, and these are like driver's license points. These are bad points. And he's actually kind of on the verge of getting a penalty for just reckless driving, generally speaking. And he just has provocative things to say that would antagonize the stewards, which is just, that's not smart. You know, and he did. This is on top of having a good result. I mean, so even if Valtteri Bottas did jump the start, and I'm not saying he did, I'm just saying theoretically, if he jumped the start, Vettel still had lots of opportunity to catch him and indeed pass him, but Valtteri was also incredibly quick and consistent and kept very good control of the car. So it's just let Valtteri have the win, have the glory of the success, and you know, not try to diminish it in any way. And Vettel turned 30 this past week, and I feel like as he gains in age, he loses in maturity. So I don't know what's going to happen as his championship progresses. You know, Vettel did manage to stretch the championship lead a little bit. He's now 20 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton in second place. And Valtteri Bottas is actually only 15 points behind that in third place. So it's a very it's a compelling championship coming across. Now, Kimi Raikkonen, the second Ferrari driver, he was plagued with more problems. He had this weird failure that was going on in his steering wheel, and I don't know how much that actually affected his race, but he ended up finishing fifth. He was behind Valtteri and Vettel, Ricciardo in third, and Hamilton in fourth. And it's a shame that Kimi got passed by Ricciardo in the first place. You know, there a third place was certainly obtainable for Kimi, and you know, it was just a whole bunch of circumstances that turned it into what it was. So I am going to keep my head high for Kimi and hold it strong. And you know, I think he's been driving well, but maybe he's losing a little bit of the flexibility that the younger guys have to cope with all the different electronics gremlins that can creep up in a car, you know, and dealing with that. And it makes Harrison upset to know that Kimi isn't given the best possible equipment and able to cope with it when it's not the best. And it upsets me too, but I'm not quite as verbal in my frustration. I want to give a shout out to the American team, Haas. You know, Romain Grosjean, he had a big smile on his face. They finished sixth in the race, 8 points, just another great result for Haas. Haas finished ahead of both Force Indias, Sergio in seventh, Esteban in eighth. And, you know, a pretty reasonable, I'll call it a salvaged result for Williams, whom ended up finishing ninth and tenth with Massa ahead of Lance Stroll, because they qualified like what, 17th, 18th or something. They were out in Q1, and for whatever reason, the car was not performing well at all on Saturday, and they turned it into a decent result. They would have certainly preferred to finish ahead of Force India. You know, it's looking harder and harder to see them take back fourth in the constructors, but considering what could have been, you know, Williams turned it into a solid day. So I want to give them credit for, you know, making some lemonade out of the lemons that was handed to them on Saturday. So this wasn't the epic long podcast that I was originally hoping it would be, but next podcast, we are going to try to get some good conversations going with both Jamie and Christopher Roche. And something I've been lacking, and it is 100% my fault, we're going to talk about predictions, because it has been a fun year for predictions. I want to give a shout out to Dave Stevens, who is all alone in first place with just 16 points, which is quite impressive to have on such a low result, such a low point number and such a great result. This is 9 races in, only 16 points. That's very good. Paul Bryant is tied for second place with someone named Sebastian Vettel. Must be a new fan. And let's see, if you go, oh, how far do you have to go before you get to me? Let's see, Jim Lau, he's in 12th place. And Robin Warner is farther down than that. I am in 34th place with 44 points. It's going to come good, I'm telling you. You know, I've been pretty dogged with my prediction, but I think that with English Pride brewing, I am going to change my prediction, and I'm going to do so in a way that please at least some of our fans. I know I'm going to go Lewis on pole, Lewis to win the race in Britain, because I think that is just the right thing to do. So until next time, which I hope will be soon after the British Grand Prix, I want to thank again Jamie Price for talking to me earlier. I'm Robin Warner. Good night.